Okay. I have a very, very simple thesis for this presentation. You have a sheet that has a bunch of names, and then a pliyakar in the back, right? Okay. Okay, so between last week's parasha, Shlach, and this week's parasha, Korach, okay, we have some very serious objections to Moshe's rule, very serious failings in terms of faith in what Hashem is able to do for them, in faith in Moshe's leadership. And one thing that is profoundly missing from both stories is any participation from women. Right? And you can say, okay, that's understandable. Most of the actors in the Bible seem to be men. Right? But what I wanted to do in this presentation was to set up a study of cases in the Bible where men and women interact on a smaller stage than they may realize at the time, but what turns out to be a profound stage in terms of the totality of Jewish history. I'm not sure if Boaz and Rus realized the night that they professed their love for each other what that meant for Jewish history, nor do we get a sense, let's say, that Yehuda understands the enormity of the moment when Tamar hands over those items before him and says, to whom do these belong? And, you know, and people in the Bible act on what appears to be a small stage, yet it turns out to be a very large stage. The obvious message for us is that, you know, that says the same thing for us. How many times will we do a small thing, right, and only perhaps years later do we realize how grand that was? We maybe didn't appreciate it at the time we did it. But I digress. It is amazing that we derive that 10 men are required from a minyan, right? The minyan, in order to say Kaddish, Kedusha, in order to repeat Shmon Esrei, certain things that require minyan, right, is derived from two psukim in last week's parasha and this week's parasha. When the Torah says, "V'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael," I will be sanctified in the midst of Israel. And the Gemara says, what do we consider the midst of Israel? 22,000 people, 600,000 people, 100 people, 20 people. What makes the midst of Israel? So the Gemara derives by using one pasuk in last week's parsha and one pasuk in this past week's parsha, Shlach and Korach, in order to determine the definition of a minyan. Is that amazing? What are the two psukim? So one of them, well, Hibadlu mitocha eda hazos, in this week's parsha, separate yourself from this wicked eda. Now, I don't know how many people there are from that pasuk. There were at least 250. I never heard of a halacha that requires 250 for a minyan, right? So how can you use that pasuk? So how? Wait.
Last week, two separated from.
Right. So last week, two separated from 12. And left us with 10. And God said, "Ad Masai lo Eda hara'a hazos." How long will this wicked Eda continue to behave this way? And that Eda comprised 10 men. Hibadlu mitoch ha Eda hazos, right? Gets me to a pasuk with the word toch in it. Get it? Because the earlier pasuk, "Ad Masai lo Eda hara'a," doesn't have the word toch. So that when the original pasuk in Vayikra says, "V'nikdashti b'soch b'nei Yisrael," what does b'soch mean? So I use these two psukim, toch and eda, to teach that the minyan is comprised of 10 men. The Meraglim were men, Korach's revolt were men, and here, therefore, a minyan is 10 men. Now, this is a great irony, because whatever needs a minyan of 10 men, everything I just described is all rabbinic laws. Kaddish is rabbinic, Kedusha is rabbinic, repeating the Shmon Esrei is rabbinic, benching the Berech Elokeinu Shulchan Mishalo is rabbinic, saying the Bracha after Megillah is rabbinic. Everything that needs a minyan of 10 men for Dabar Shebi Kedusha, what we call, in order to say Baruch Hu, to Lane, Haftorah, need 10 men. every one of these is Drabbanan. What is the only thing that Minat Torah requires a minyan?
Zahar. Parshat Zahar.
Kriyas Torah. Yibo.
You can fulfill the Doraisa law of Parsha Zohar even without a minyan.
Kaddish?
These are all rabbinic laws. No, the ikur meaning of that pasuk. What does Mikdash Kibisof and Israel refer to?
Killing yourself, Al Kiddush Hashem.
Correct. Dying Al Kiddush Hashem rather than violate three mitzvahs. We learned this through some rabbinic exegesis in Pesachim and Bava Metzia and in Sanhedrin and in Yerushalmi, but that we have to give up our lives more readily when it's public. Besoch b'nei Yisrael. Right? There's a dispute about exactly how this works, but the Torah law of Nikdashti besoch b'nei Yisrael is called dying of Kiddush Hashem, right? What comprises the minyan for that? So this here, you have a machlokas ne'achronim. It's very much mashma. This is a chumra now. That to make up that minyan to die al Kiddush Hashem, don't quote me out of context here, I know we're on tape. To make up that minyan, that quorum, to be considered besoch b'nei Yisrael, can include women. Tell me why. Well, first, before answering that question, let's figure out why women don't comprise a minyan for those other things we mentioned, because they're not obligated in those things. You can't make a minyan for something in which you're not obligated. Right? But every Talmudic discourse points to the fact that women are just as much in the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem as much as men. If someone puts a gun to my head and says, I'm going to kill you now unless you take this gun and kill that person right now, you're not allowed to. Right? No difference between a man and a woman in that law. A woman can't say, well, this is I'm exempt from time-bound mitzvahs, so I'll kill her. Right? So the woman has to obey that law just as much as a man. You hear? So if she is obligated in that law, so she's got to do, she's part of the minyan, so to say, here. So you hear my irony now? Women are exempt from the rabbinic rule of minyan, but they're very much obligated on the Torah rule of minyan. I mean, it's not an irony. The irony is that no one should ever know from these things, you know, from the Torah law of this pasuk. But that's a very, very regular event that we observe the rabbinic law of this of manifestation of this pasuk. Yes, ma'am?
I have learned, too, that women aren't required to be in a minyan, though, also because they didn't believe the spies' report. Like, they went along with the men. But they had more emunah, and they said they believed what God said, and they didn't go along with the men. Like they
and that's
went
why
along.
They were exempt from minyan?
Yeah, because they had more faith in
I've never heard that parish, but I think where it's coming from is that men have the punishment of minyan to atone for these two stories
right.
of Shlach and Korach that only men took part and not women. It's fascinating.
Right, they were like, we believe in Hashem, but we're going to go along with
I'll you. Tell you, there is, I do see one thing you see in the Magen Avraham that says women are exempt, so to say, or shouldn't bench Kiddush Levana on Saturday night after Rosh Chodesh, because the whole point of Kiddush Levana has to do with atonement for the Egel, right? We'll get to that another time. And since the women didn't worship the Egel, they don't have to, right? So the men who were involved in the two stories that make up Minyan, this is fascinating, I've heard it before, it sounds good, have to attend Minyan. Women don't. I don't need the Minyan that you need to atone for a story that only you guys took part in and I didn't. Very interesting. Fascinating. You know,
the women didn't give money. They didn't give their jewelry for the
ego.
But they did. They gladly gave it over to the Mishka.
Beautiful. That's great. Okay. So, all right. So now I just want to. This I actually said this in Shul last week, but I'll just repeat it now because it's in print in front of you. Is that there is a contradiction between the psukim in Bamidbar where God tells Moshe, I want you to send scouts into the land. So it seems to be a command from God. It starts with Bereshit Moshe Mushlach Lecha Anashim V'Yeturus Aretz, and he has some questions and come back with a report. But in Devarim, in the beginning of Devarim, there's no such command from God. Moshe says, and then the people came to me and said, we're about to enter the land. We should send scouts. We could report, and then Moshe said, the thing found favor in my eyes, so I sent scouts into the land. That's quite a flagrant, an apparent contradiction. Right? Was it commanded by God, or was this something that the people proffered? So the Rashi quotes a Medrash, and asks this question. Well, endowed in Chazal to ask this question. So Rashi says that the response, the resolution is in the word lecha, shlach lecha on Hashem.
Wait, so
first the people asked, then Moshe went to God and said, God, is this a good idea? And God said, shlach lecha, Moshe, you decide. It's up to you. I may not think it's necessary because I told you with the burning bush, it's a land flowing with milk and honey. So I promised it to you, it's going to be fine. But if you think it's a good idea, do it. And Rabban goes through a whole arichos of why Moshe felt it was a good idea. Fine. The Kli Yakar, however, look at the bottom. You see the Dvar Acher towards the bottom? At the top, he points out to this contradiction. And towards the bottom, there are some underlined portions there. You see it? It says Dvar Acher. L'kach parat anoshim. That's what it says, Shlach Lecha anoshim. You should have said, Shlach Lecha meraglim, Shlach Lecha turim. So, this is Shlach Lecha anoshim. The Fisha Amar Razal, Ha'anoshim ha'yu sonim es ha'aretz, v'amrum nitzna rosh v'nashuva mitzrayma, v'hanoshim ha'yu mechavavos ha'aretz, v'amru tzlananu achuza. The men said, let's go back to Egypt, it was nicer there. The women said, give us an achuza. They didn't just say, give us a Yerusha, give us our inheritance. Achuza, we want a chayz, we want to grab the land, referring to the daughters of Tzlafchad. Right. I would prefer to send women. Men will be so full of themselves, they're so important, they make more of a mission than it was. I would have sent women. That's the contradiction. Bnei Yisrael asked Moshe something. He turned to God and said, God told him, listen, Moshe, this is my advice. You are probably inclined to send men. I would send women. Right? Fascinating. So this got me thinking about turn the page. That when everyone says, well, the Bible is misogynist, it only counts the men. So I will tell you this. That whatever the Bible does with respect to men and women, you want to say that it should have been groundbreaking and set a new stage. I'll just say it like this. At the time the Tanakh was written, it was following the conventions of how to count. And since in the beginning of Bamidbar, the counting is for the army, it only counted those who would serve in the army, hence men. Right? I think what gives us a much better picture of the Bible's treatment of the difference between men and women is to study the 9 or 10 times where men and women have an important decision to make, and they clash. Okay? And I took every case. Mamish, every case. The only one I did not put on this list was Ruth. Oh, no, I have Ruth and Boaz.
You have Ruth.
3, 4, 6, 8, 9. No, there's one more that belongs in this list. That's a mistake. It should be on the list. Chulda and Yirmiyahu. Many people probably don't even know what I mean, what I'm referring to yet. But we will before the half hour is over. Okay? So no, and if there's one you think I missed, please put it in. Let's figure it out. All right? But these are all cases where men and women clash in their opinions of what needs to be done for the family, for Klal Yisrael, for whatever it is. All right? You may be wondering what's Amram and Miriam, but that requires a bit of drush.
And otherwise, like Michal?
No, David Avigayo. I didn't put David Michal because Michal is not a historical player at all. Avigayo is. Okay? I did not put down Yaakov because it does not appear that he clashes. He does not have a difference of opinion with... Where would you say? Rachel, Leah, where did you...
Oh,
He does things with consensus with his wife, with Rachel and Leah.
About Avram and Yocheved. They separate.
Yeah, so that's that. I put that as Miriam. Miriam's advice of what to do. Anything else? Anyone else? You want to add to this list? Let's start going through it and see them. The cases are obvious. And I think
Adam
one,
and Eve. Adam and Sarah.
Adam and Chava. I don't know if it's a clash. I think they're blaming each other because that's what happens when people feel guilty. But
it wasn't a difference.
I don't know if it's a clash. I don't know if they did. She convinced him to do something. And he behaved like a little baby afterwards, saying, you know, it's her
but
fault.
Would he have wanted to do
like
that if she wouldn't have told him?
The only time a woman could change a man is when he's a baby.
No, I think the women change the men all the time, but they just don't know it.
Right.
They only know it.
That I'll agree with. And, yeah. Okay, so the all right. So let's see the examples. Okay, they're so obvious. You know, I think that the one that's not so obvious I left off this list, and that's a shame. I'm sorry, but you can put it on. Avram and Sarah is obvious. Is what to do about Ishmael. Okay, Sarah wants him out of the house, and Avraham says, "Why not let him stay?" So what's Avraham's svara? Well, let's start with svara. We have to start with Sarah. Why did she want him out of the house? It was a bad influence on Yitzchak. In fact, Ramban, who was very critical of Sarah's treatment of Hagar back in Parshas Lech Lecha, says she's totally justified in Vayera. In fact, in Lech Lecha, when she mistreats Hagar, the Ramban writes, that's why the Muslims mistreat us in Europe today, because of what Sarah did to Hagar. Imagine such a chutzpah to write such a thing, but that's what Ramban did. Masa Avos Siman Labanim is recorded in the Talmud, but only in terms of the biblical history. Something that happens in Esther can be because of something that Yaakov did to Esav. But Ramban's chiddush is that he took it out of the Bible. He said that the Christians behave in a certain way to us because of something Yaakov did to Esav. So he takes it out of the Bible with his own sense of history.
Oh
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So Ramban was doing something like what rabbis tend to do in their sermons today. You know, we look at events in history and we say, "Oh, now look what's happening now in you know in Iraq and Iran, right?" And so, okay, so Avraham doesn't like this idea. Sorry, you know, it's easy for you to say. It's not your son. This is my son. And my son, only because you advised it. Right? So she turns back to him and says, according to the Medrash, you know, Avraham, when you complained to God about not having children, remember what you said to God?
I don't have children.
I don't have children. If Avraham had said, this appears in Rashi, by the way, if Avraham had said, God, you keep promising me I'm going to be a great nation, but Sarah and I have no children, what do you think God would have said then? Because when he said, God, I have no children, God told him, don't worry, Avram, you will have a son, your son. But if Avram had said, God, Sarah and I have no children, what is it very likely, I can't predict for God, but what is it very likely that God would have said? You will have a child with Sarah. At which point, Sarah not knowing that, in the next chapter would say to Avram, listen, great nation, but you're not a great nation. I'm willing to give up my spot in history. God never said you'd be a great nation with me, so take my handmaiden Hagar. That's what she said, right? And Avram would have corrected her and said, Sarah, I have good news for you. God did tell me I'm going to have a child with you. The only reason why Avram takes Hagar is because by Sarah's prodding, the next pasuk says, Vatikach Sarai Eishes Avram. She kept doing it. She pushed him to it, right? But if Avram was able to convince her that God told me that my only way of being a great nation is with you, then of course she wouldn't do it, and he wouldn't go along with it. Right? So look, one little word, Anachnu Olchim Aririm, instead of Anochi Olech Ariri, could have changed Jewish history. But it didn't happen. And Sarah suggests this to Avram. Maybe she could have anticipated, she couldn't have anticipated, but things went very wrong for her. right? She couldn't imagine that Hagar would turn on her the way she did. There's a convention in the ancient Near East that if just what in all ancient codes, what happens if a man and a woman have no children? The wife shall choose another woman for the husband to bear children. They shall be her children, right? She shall take the children. Like Ibn Ezra says, Sarah would take the child, but Sarah never takes the child, right? And if the women become estranged from each other, right? No. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yes, absolutely. You give the woman her freedom. In other words, she's no longer a bondmaid. She's no longer bound to your house. Send her free and keep the child for yourself. Sarah acts based on that convention with great chassidus. She says, Goresha Sa'ama, which is the Talmudic word for free. Gerushin means free. It's the lashon for marriage as well as servitude, ending to those institutions. So she said, but she said, with the boy. That's the whole point. I don't want him in my house. Influencing my Yitzchak. Right?
Well, she knew she was going to send her to die, then it wasn't necessarily so charitable to send
her. I don't know.
She's,
Sending them into the desert.
Sending them on their way.
Maybe have them go to the desert.
She may have, whatever was in her mind, but they send her away. She's free, right? Okay, so at that point, so we have to ask Avram, what are you thinking? Sarah says he's a bad influence on Yitzchak. So Avram might have been thinking, says the Chavetz Chaim, let Yitzchak be a good influence on Yishmael. So that's naive. First of all, Yishmael is older. Second of all, it's a klal gadol in Jewish history. The bad influences the good more than the good influences the bad. John, is there proof from this from Mirror Mirror? Star Trek, right? The good are able to imitate the bad much better than the bad are able to imitate the good.
But then there's the healthy environment.
Anyone else know what we're talking about?
Shouldn't we have Dina in a box because she might be a good influence on Yishmael, but maybe they
on Esav, yes. You know what? Stanley's bringing up a very important thing. There could be a difference when it comes to a good woman, a good shidduch. That's interesting, Stan. Thanks for bringing that up. In other words, the Gemara thought that Yaakov wanted to hide Dina from Esav, and Yaakov was condemned for that. Why are you worried that Esav will be a bad influence on Dina? Dina could be a good influence on Esav. It's amazing drash. Being the son of Yaakov, the son of Rivka, the son of Yitzchak, the son of Rivka, the brother of Yaakov, being surrounded by patriarchs and matriarchs, right? He's the grandson of Abraham, he's the grandson of Sarah, all these great people around him, Bobby Zaidi and Tati and Mami and greatest people of our history, didn't get Esav to become good. But a good wife, that would have done the trick.
Well, that's why Leah had sad eyes, though, too, because she thought she had her marry him her whole life.
Right.
It seems like for all their greatness, the forefathers didn't necessarily see their kids for who they were. It's possible that Avram didn't see Ishmael for who he was.
The Rosh Hashanah Hirsch discusses that, yes, indeed.
Jewish men still like, their baseball sons better than their studious, we rave about the
sometimes. It's a problem with older and younger, so it's also embracious. Okay, so the point is that Sarah gets her way because Hashem keeps telling Abraham,
listen to
Sarah. Basically, she gets her way in both chapter 16 and chapter 21.
Sorry, the one thing that I have a problem with too with Sarah is that, if Hagar had the child for them, it was supposed to be their child then.
It's not all common Jewish commentaries agree with that.
Okay.
But
I guess it's just kind of wouldn't she have had some responsibility then for Ishmael being, she bring that spirituality into him?
Interesting.
And isn't that a little bit of a failure? And then to say, he's not good, so.
It's interesting. The point that Ben Nicole is making is that the ancient convention is that the woman that's brought into the household becomes a surrogate mother, and I take the child.
Right. that's why
she becomes my maid.
Leia and Rachel,
right.
The four
right.
women,
right?
Right.
Right. And I take the child, but it's mashma from our story, at least Rashi says, that's too cruel, I can't accept such a thing, that you take a child that another woman bore, right? But instead, it's he's raised in my home, and my husband is supposed to charge of him, and she didn't like the way he was, she didn't complain all the years before Yitzchak was born, right? It was only after he's a bad influence on what I see as Avram's real future. Right? And Hashem tells him, "Be Yitzchok, you karei l'chazar. That's your future," and Sarah is correct. Yes.
Did anyone ever question Abraham's paternity of Ishmael?
No, I don't think so. People questioned Abraham's paternity of Rashi says of Yitzchok. Remember, right before he was born, Tzkizunt, she was with Avimelech. You know. So people, late Sonny Hadora, she writes, and Pasha's told us. So what did Hashem do? He made him look just like Avram. Avram Holidis Yitzchak, just like it. Yes, but...
Can I ask in Hebrew?
Say what?
Can I ask you in Hebrew?
Look back a shot, okay.
Mashi Asta, Mashi Tomer, so I got it at Mav, and I got it at the Hale, and I got it at the Smecha, and I got it at the Ramutar.
As I'll repeat the question. Is it permitted to say you give birth to a child and I'll take the child? So it's permitted to adopt a child. You know what I'm saying? But it's certainly forbidden against the will of this woman. And adopting a child does not create paternity in Judaism. Right? It doesn't make you, in fact, a Kohen adopt a child, the child doesn't become a Kohen. There's no such convention in Judaism that says I adopt a child and you become, you know. I mean, look, your own child isn't physically yours. You know, every child, whether it's another woman or Avram's wife, is the child is God's. So anyway, but Rashi says it's a cruel thing and Jews wouldn't do such a thing. Ibn Ezra, however,
we hear a story about the Bible. Trying to
emulate it and say this is what I would do. Yeah.
But
okay, so in this case...
We can look at our fathers and mothers and to say, okay, they live in a different world and that's why we're still here because there is still things to fix.
Yeah.
And of course they were like tzaddikim, but there is still things that they did
correct. So, two things right away we will see are very differently treated here. Avram has two wives at the same time. And today, well, this is a cherem. You have excommunicated for doing such a thing. Our great biblical characters had, I don't like to call them slaves, but slavery is an institution that is so abhorrent to us to take a person against their will and take their freedom from them. Right, so, it doesn't appear that there's anything like that in the Torah. Torah says if a slave runs away, you have to help him into his freedom. You can't turn him back to his master. Right? Tanakh never refers to an owner of a person, chas v'shalom. Right? And Adarabit, you know, because you have to read the whole Torah Shebaal Peh, what we have to do for this person and his family members. And right? It's not so simple that maybe we were wrong in calling it a slave, per se. But be it as it may, we do see certain conventions of the ancient world that we find socially abhorrent today, right? Because times have changed, right? It might have been good to have a Lincoln-esque kind of statement in the Torah, like for our forefathers, you didn't like being slaves in Egypt, abolish slavery altogether. Instead, what the founding fathers of this country did, and what the Torah does, is set the stage for that day, set the stage for that day by, and it's all about proclaim liberty throughout the land and declare very, very, especially with Torah Shebaal Peh. I might not know these things from the Tanakh itself, but Torah Shebaal Peh, the Seches Kedushin, tells me all of the it says, that's why it says, Hakona Evid La'atzmo, Kona Adon La'atzmo. When you purchase a slave, you've purchased a master. All the things that you have to do for him, all the things you're not allowed to do for him. You know, so the Torah gradually changed the frame of mind away from multiple wives, away from the So too, away from the idea of taking another woman's child. Certainly Rashi says that that was never the impression to begin with. Ibn Ezra, who was more familiar with ancient Near Eastern custom, may have just felt, listen, this is what was done in the ancient world, and this is what Sarah was doing. She took the child. Right? When she said, V'ibonemi meni, you get the pun? Ibonem. Mm-hmm. I will take her son. I will build Ben Bonem. Right? Okay, but no question that throughout the story, Avram is told again and again and again, and history bears it out, Sarah is correct. She should have been more correct. If Avram had only not made such a big tzimis about Yishmael, Hashem might not have told him the promises of what he would become. Okay, I don't think we're going to finish all of these this week, so I'm going to be here through the end of July, so I'm not, if anyone still wants, you can add a week to my sessions for June, if that's okay. So let's do Yitzchak and Rivka now, and this I think can be the most interesting. You see, Rivka has information that Yitzchak doesn't know. When she was pregnant, Hashem told her, Shnei goyim bebitneich, u'shnei l'yumim m'mayach yiparedu, u'lom milom m'yamot, v'rav yavod tzavir. There are two nations inside of you, right? The kicking you feel is more than just the norm, like Rashbam says, because that's why I'm recording it in the Bible. The Bible didn't need to record what a pregnancy was like. You don't think that Sarah's pregnancy was also difficult at the age of 90? Why didn't the Torah tell her what it was like for her to? I'm sure she called out to God and said, God, this is painful, painful, I can't take it. So why only Rivka? Why was only Rivka given? Rachel didn't even have a womb, the Gemara says. I mean, if she died in childbirth, it's obviously she went a long time without giving birth. It must have been great, great difficulty for her to give birth. Why doesn't the Torah tell us Rachel's pregnancy problems? Rivka was the one with the least problems. One pasuk. Right? And yet it tells us what her pregnancy felt like. What?
Yitzchak learned from his father's mistake.
Ah, there, yeah.
He prayed for his wife.
He prayed for her, right. That's beautiful, yes. So that's what the stories of the Torah are really all about. How we can learn from past events.
When she shared out with Abraham, is that the time gave her? Yitzchak.
So, Stanley, I think you're right, because... But I would ask a woman. I would ask a woman. You're married 20 years and you don't have children. You conceive. You know you're pregnant. And then God tells you, not only are you carrying one, you're carrying two. You don't come right home that day and share that news with your husband? Who on the whole planet is not going home that day in the history of the human race doesn't come home that day and scream out to her husband the news that it's not just one, it's two? Right?
Well, it seems like Yitzchak in this whole story comes across almost as feeble. Because otherwise, forget about that. Like, later on in the story, why didn't she come to Yitzchak and say, listen, like, you shouldn't be giving God a birth rate?
So allow me to create the following scenario. It may be that this is going to take us the rest of this class, and I'll have to continue next week. Is that, I think Rivka, like you're intimating here, I mean, the women will know better than the men, that she does go home, go tell him, and said, and he's, she's going to say, we're having twins. He goes, how do you know? He goes, I was praying to God. I mean, that's the machlokes also in the Mefarshim. What does Vatelech Lidroshes Hashem mean at that time? So some say she went, Rashi says she went for an oracle. She went for prophecy. Right? So other Rashbam says she prayed. But Tehillah Lidroshes Hashem, Doreshes Hashem means to pray. She prayed. Whatever it is, but you see, if it was an oracle, like Rashi says, then maybe Rivka was a little, why did you go to? She obviously didn't go to him for the oracle, right? Rashi says she went to Shem Vayiver. She didn't want to go to her husband because her husband was Negevedev. I don't want my husband to know that I'm fed up with his pains, whatever it is. But she didn't go to her husband because he was out in the cold on this. So she runs home to him and says, Yitzi, guess what? It's two. So he says, how do you know? And she said, but I'm going to tell you something. God told me the last three words, V'rav ya'avod sa'ir. And he said, wow, you're a prophetess. Wow. Right? But wait a second, if God spoke to her, why isn't she in the list of the seven prophetesses that we're going to have to table for next week? But she's not. Sarah is, but Rivka is not. But and when we see the Gemara has all kinds of prophecies for Leah, why isn't she listed? So we'll have to see what creates a Nevi'ah in the Gemara. There's something that makes Abigail a Nevi'ah, but someone else not. We'll have to see what that is. And we'll get a nice interpretation of what makes a Nevi'ah and a Navi. Yes.
Was this divine inspiration as opposed to prophecy?
So, you mean Ruach HaKodesh instead of Nevu'ah. That could be. Yeah, let's call it that. Because Nevu'ah means that Ko Amar Hashem. Nevu'ah means speak out these words publicly as a message to the people. This is a divine inspiration for Rivka, as it was for Leah. So that would be a good difference. Okay.
What part of the Tanakh is the story of Davi and Abigail?
Shmuel Aleph Perek Chafei.
Perek what?
Perek Chafei. Shmuel Aleph, the end of Perek Chafei. So here is, I think that Rivka went back and she told her husband everything, and she quoted maybe word for word, because it's a small little pasuk, right? Shnei goyim bevitneich u'shnei le'umim imeyach yiporeidu. A parallelistic structure there. U'la'om mil'om ye'emotz. I'm sorry to say that they will not get along. V'rav ya'avod so'ir. Those three words are crucial. V'rav ya'avod so'ir. What does it mean? Rivka, obviously later in the story, takes it to mean the younger. The older shall serve the younger. Rav, the older one, shall avod, shall serve the younger. Rav, yavod sa'ir. The sa'ir will serve the older. But why would I need an oracle to tell me that the younger will serve the older? So, all right, so it could be, you can answer that. It could be because Yitzchak himself is a younger one. Don't think that Yitzchak, just because you're a younger one and you prevailed over your older brother, which by that time he certainly did, Ishmael, in his lifetime, submitted to Yitzchak, and we know this even in terms of narrative. Every time Yitzchak and Ishmael are mentioned together, Yitzchak comes first. Whenever Yaakov and Esav are mentioned together, except one exception for good reason, Esav is always mentioned first. It says Yitzchak and Ishmael buried Avraham.
Right.
It says Esav and Yaakov buried Yitzchak. Right? We have the right to read the text closely enough to learn a message from that. Okay? And it's pshat. I'm not saying it's drash. Okay? So what does Rav Yavod Sa'ir mean? So comes the Balaturim and the Dasa came in Balei Tosfos and some other Ashkenazim in portion. And Ashkenazim have a dog in this race more than Sfardim. Can you think why? You have to know your history in the Middle Ages. Jews were accused in Middle Age Europe of acting immorally like Yaakov in this story. And we are the innocent bystanders of your chicanery and your subterfuge and your...
Why is Esav ever linked with Christianity? Is there an actual...
Edom... Is so much genealogically not connected to Rome or Christianity in terms of genealogy. I say, I think because in certain psukim in Tanakh, Edom is our latest enemy, our most comprehensive enemy. So it just became Rome and Christendom. Let it be known that there's a prophecy in Jehovah that says that Masod Dumah. It's Ba'arav, the Arabia will be our worst enemy after that. So who knows what? Let's just
They're
be good.
Right now.
Let's just be good people. Just be good people. So comes the Das Kanim and Jews in Ashkenazic lands to say other interpretations to this, and I'll just leave you with this: is that Varav Yavod Sa'ir can mean greatness, Rav, shall make its way, Ya'avod, more of an Aramaic interpretation of the Shoresh, will make its way to the younger one. The Rav, Ya'avod So'ir. Because if it was the older shall serve the younger, that's incongruent. How do you say older in Hebrew?
Bechor.
It should be a Bechor, Ya'avod So'ir. Alright? So, So Rav Yavot Sa'ir seems to mean that something great will work its way to the younger one. Mm-hmm. And so you can say, could Yaakov have known those words and still want to give the bracha he intended for Esav? Right. That's the sort of the tragedy of the difference between Yitzchak and Rivka. They're very different people. Mm. And Avram's servant was looking at that woman with the water and the camels. And look at the text of Parshas Chayesar and Parshas Vayera. The author wants you to think that she is just like Avraham. Vayimaher for the angels, Vatimaher, Vayorotz, Vatorotz. She's behaving just like Avraham. She's just like Avraham. This would be a great daughter-in-law for Avraham. Without thinking, well, she'd be a great wife for Yitzchak. Right? So I'm not saying it was a terrible marriage, but it was misunderstood. They had very different approaches. He was so much in the clouds, and she was so much in the earth. I'm not saying that she knew how to be practical. She's the sister of Bas Lavan Arami. She's Achos Lavan Arami, Bas Besuel, Mipadan Aram. The parsha starts off by telling us how she was, you know, she was ingrained with that past. And she knew how to pick out a good subterfuge herself when necessary. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay? So she felt that Rav Yavot Sa'ir included what we might call Gashmius. Yitzchak says, I know between my sons. I know very well. Esav puts food on the table. He's the Gashmius kind of guy. Let me give him Gashmius. Tala Shamayim, Shemane Ha'oretz, Rav Dugan Misirosh, Shevdu Chamen. I want my sons to love each other. I want to create the Yisachar and Zvulun kind of partnership with them. Yaakov will be all the Ruchnius, and Esav will be the Gashmius, and will protect his brother. We'll see. He'll help him. They'll work each other. They'll work with each other. Like Yisachar and Zvulun. I don't want only one of my sons to take over, like I did. Or all my brothers fell through. It does not give me any joy that I got all of my father's inheritance because all my brothers fell out and married out and became wastewarfs. I want both my sons to follow my path. And Rivka says, I don't go along with that reading of Rav Yavot Sa'ir. I know my children better than you. Right? The woman's intuition, call it whatever you will. But Rivka does get her way. But it comes at a price. She never saw Yaakov again after she sent him away. Right? Now, the Bechor Shor and some good Ashkenazi commentaries say that Esav is behaving immorally. He should have told his father, Dad, I know you want to give me this blessing I've been waiting a long time for. Which he saw. Lo yidati yom hazeh, I may die tomorrow. Let me write it out my will right now. Right? Esav should have said, God, it's not mine. I sold it when we were younger. I don't want to disappoint you. What? I don't deserve the blessing of a firstborn, whatever that might be. Which, if you read the text, was fully Gashmius. Everything about it is Gashmius, is Tala Shemayim Shmane Aretz, is wealth and fat of the land. No reference to anything Ruchani. In fact, when Yaakov leaves home later in the Parsha to find a wife, she conveniently makes it about a wife. She doesn't want to mention anything about running away for his life because that's inconvenient. I don't want my husband to know I was behind him. Right? So she's brilliant. She gets a shtoch to Esav, or if Yaakov marries one of those women like Esav, right? And she gets Yaakov to leave the house without any pretext of it being because he has to run for his life. Right? And when Yitzchak sends him away, he gives him another bracha. Listen to this bracha. V'yitzeh l'cha es birkas Avraham. L'cha ul'zarecha yitach. V'yishtecha es eretz migurecha. This land, Esav can get another land. Nothing in that bracha indicates that he's going to be Avram Yitzchak and Esav. Right? Let him get whatever he wants. Once he has Sahar Seir, let him have whatever land. This land, this is for Yaakov. If Esav wants to be on his side, fine. Rivka basically tore a rift between the two boys. Should we second-guess Jewish history, how it might have been different? I don't want to second-guess history. She knew better. Because she heard the oracle from God. I'm going with her interpretation of what the Rav Yavot Sa'ir means. But let's understand that Yitzchak was not out in the cold here. He wasn't just this Nebush being fooled. He felt, let me give the Gashmius to Esav, the Ruchnius to Yaakov, Talav, Yitzchak Lecham, as Birkas Avraham. He never intended to give Birkas Avraham to Esav. Esav wouldn't know what to do with Birkas Avraham. And he mentions the land of Israel to Yaakov. Right? So that's why when Bnei Yisrael were about to leave Egypt, Hashem's first word to Moshe was, Bnei Bechori Yisrael, which is darshaned by Rashi. Now, once and for all, Esav has no claim to this bracha. Because if you have Birkas Avram, it means you're supposed to be strangers in a strange land for a certain amount of time, and Esav never went down to Egypt. So Esav, Yaakov paid his debt, Bnei Bechori Yisrael, story's over. Right? But Rivka, once again, like her mother-in-law, gets her way. But it's a shame that it had to be through subterfuge. And because of that, right or wrong, Yaakov suffers through the rest of Bereishis. He falls in love with a younger sister and gets the older sister. Lo yasekein b'mkomeinu, in our place, we don't put the younger before the older like in your place. Right? Paskin like Lavan. The younger sister shouldn't get married before an older sister without permission. Right? Okay, we're going to continue next week with Tamar and Yehuda, and we don't have to do that Kliyaka, we'll go straight through the rest of the list, and we'll see how this bears itself out. Okay, we're pushing ourselves off 1 week on the other topics.
Thank you.
Go ahead, everyone.